8 p.m. to celebrate the queer programmers and the queer community of KBOO as part of our 50th anniversary. Emma Lugo of Transpositive will host this special on-air program. You can join us that night at the Queer Community Open House here at KBOO at 20 Southeast Avenue from 7 to 10 p.m. on August 31st. More information about the Queer Community Open House and anniversary programming is available at kboo.fm.
Good morning. It's just 11 o'clock, almost 11:01. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned next for the Recovery Zone coming right up.
Hi, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is The Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. Today we're going to talk about the work of two organizations, Ceasefire Oregon and Students for Change, and what they're trying to do to reduce gun violence here in Oregon. Penny Okamoto is the executive director of Ceasefire Oregon, and Penelope Spur is a high school student from the Portland area, who is very active with Students for Change. And so I'd like to welcome both of you to KBOO.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you for having me.
Great, great. And I guess I'll just get started by asking each of you, what got you involved in this issue? Why is it so important to you? And maybe you want to start, Penny?
Sure. I'm Penny Okamoto. I'm the executive director of Ceasefire Oregon and the Ceasefire Oregon Education Foundation. So I've actually been involved in... I've been involved with this work for the past 18 years, either as a volunteer or as the executive director of Ceasefire
Oregon.
As long
as Penelope's been alive, basically.
Longer than she's been alive, now that I think about it, yes. Suddenly I feel old. but, you know, I also feel incredibly energized because Penelope is here and because of the amazing work that her organization, Students for Change, has done, and also the Parkland students all throughout the United States. But I got involved in this, so that would be in 2000 after the Columbine shooting. My first action was that I was actually the coordinator of volunteers for the Million Mom March. Had a huge turnout in Portland and actually throughout the state of Oregon. And also there was a school shooting in Flint, Michigan that really made me start to question our gun laws and why this was happening. There was a five-year-old Kyla Rollins who was shot to death in her school. A fellow student who was only 6 years old found his uncle's gun at the home, took that gun to school and shot her to death. So it really got me started thinking and questioning how we got to the point that we were, and that would have been in 1999 and 2000. So that's how I got started.
Yeah, you never stopped. And now you're part of Ceasefire Oregon.
Yes.
And how about you, Penelope?
Well, after the Parkland shooting, I was really in a state of shock, and I was disturbed, and I was incredibly upset, and I felt like I needed to do something to change what was going on. And so this was more a realization across youth across the country.
It sounds like it, yeah.
So one of the most reassuring things about the whole movement, the whole student movement, is that I know there are so many people who feel like me, who are really upset and who want change. And so just right after that shooting, I just really felt this urge that I needed to take action.
And there was another shooting even after that in New Mexico, wasn't there?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's not stopping, and that's like what we're really trying to address here, isn't it? I mean, like that the thoughts and prayers approach hasn't been working.
No, it hasn't.
And so do we have some actual statistics on how this is going? Like, say, just nationally, gun-related fatalities, and not even with mass shootings, but just in general, like, what's the situation here in the U.S. in terms of guns and the numbers of, I mean, First of all, just the numbers of firearm deaths. I read that there's quite a few.
Sure. So nationally, there are about 30 to 35,000 firearm deaths every year. Of course, it fluctuates with the year. The last couple of years nationally, that's seen an uptick in the last 2 years. So about two-thirds of those deaths nationally are firearm suicide. So you're going to say about, let's say about 11,000 a year are homicides, 22,000 around, roughly speaking, are firearm suicides. And then, of course, there's unintentional suicide, suicide by law enforcement, other, you know, unintentional suicides, like I said before. So that's nationally. In the state of Oregon, our death rate from firearms actually for the past few years has actually exceeded the death rate from car crash.
Oh, really?
All right. It's pretty high. We lose, I think last year it was 400 and, no, so maybe 2015 or 2016, 472 people to firearm deaths. The thing with Oregon is that our national rate of suicide is very high. So the death rate from firearm suicide, so let me put it this way. Suicide counts for about 80% or more of all firearm deaths in the state of Oregon.
And it was only two-thirds nationally.
It's two-thirds nationally. It's over 80%
in
the state
of
Oregon. Right, exactly.
Wow.
And by the way, if anyone has, if you're concerned about someone who might be thinking about taking their own life, you can contact Lines for Life, linesforlife.org. And I believe that number is 1-800-273-TALK. I believe that's the number. So that's the big issue here. Nationwide, the United States has an estimated 393 million firearms in the United States. And that's from a survey from an organization called the Small Arms Survey based in Geneva, Switzerland. And, of course, we can't keep records. The NRA doesn't allow us to keep records on that. So it's an estimate. But it is estimated to be 393 million firearms in the United
States. Which I read was... sort of equal to the number of all the rest of the world's firearms, personal firearms? In other words, we're like half of them?
Roughly, yeah. I think it's right around 45% at this point of all civilian-owned firearms in the United States.
Are in the United States.
Right. And about 3% of gun owners own half of those guns.
Wow.
So if 3% of the gun owners own half of the guns in the United States... And the United States owns roughly half the guns, civilian guns in the world. That means 3% of Americans own roughly 20 to 25% of all the civilian held guns in the world.
Weird. That's a phenomenal number. That's like, yeah.
That's what the National Rifle Association thinks, too. And it's causing a big problem because they are faced now with selling a product to a product saturated market.
Right, right. And so, which is basically, I guess, why they're trying to push for more guns for women, more guns for, I mean, we all need guns to protect ourselves.
Which is a fallacy.
Yeah. But that goes, a couple more things here. So then we've got the things that you're concerned about, Penelope, which had to do with just mass shootings in public places. And another thing I read is that that is more prevalent in our country than any other place in the world. We are sort of an anomaly for public mass shootings. Have you heard of stuff like that? And what are the numbers with that, or how does that go?
Well, I'm definitely aware of that. I have to be honest. I'm not completely aware of the numbers. But, I mean, what I do know is that especially after Parkland, much of the attention was on these, on like communities, I guess, let me phrase it differently. I don't know the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I know that.
I read that it's much smaller, but it's still like strange in terms of the world. But it doesn't. Yeah. And basically it's just something that we're also very concerned about. Could you weigh in on that, Penny?
Sure. So there are actually, and depending on how you're going to define a mass shooting, then the Gun Violence Archive, and I think the FBI defines mass shooting as four or more people shot. So there are definitions for mass shooting. Does that mean that they're shot? Or does that mean people are killed? So there are different definitions. But Gun Violence Archive, GVA is what I'll refer to it from now on, they actually collect data for all the shootings that they can find throughout the United States. It's pretty stunning. And, I mean, it happens several times a week throughout the United States where we have an incident where four or more people are shot.
Right. And then in public places like the Las Vegas shooting or the Columbine or schools or whatever, that's like, you know, an even weirder thing that's going on in the U.S. And who are these people that own guns? It's more who wants to own a gun? Who are these 3% or who even like the half of the people who consider themselves gun owners or whatever?
Right. So when I think of gun owners, I mean, I think of, you know, people, you know, like my good friend Paul Kemp, who, excuse me, who is one of the co-founders of Gun Owners for Responsible Ownership.
Uh-huh.
He co-founded that along with Robert and Jenna Ewell. After the Clackamas Town Center shooting, they lost loved ones at the Clackamas Town Center shooting. And they knew that gun ownership could be something that, you know, people do every day, and there's responsible gun ownership. And so they really focused on that. And actually, Paul Kemp was hoping he could be here today, but unfortunately he was not able to. But he would have been a great addition to this.
Yeah,
so,
a gun owner.
He is. He's a gun owner, and he really supports responsible gun ownership. And in fact, his organization was behind Initiative Petition 44, which would have required people to, well, encourage people basically, and had some penalties for people to keep their firearms stored. So we have to remember that the vast majority of gun owners in the United States are highly responsible gun owners. They keep their firearms locked up. They keep mm-hmm. them away from children. They make sure that they're secured so they can't be stolen. So then they use their firearms for, you know, hunting or for recreation. So we do have to remember, like I said, the vast majority of gun owners
it's
are
not
responsible.
That ceasefire wants to take all guns away from all gun owners. That's something to get out there then, isn't it?
Well, that's a convenient lie for...
Yeah, that's what you read. They want to take our guns away.
Right, but yeah, we do support 100% a ban on assault weapons, but no, we don't think that all guns should be taken away. No.
Ah, okay. And one other aspect of these sort of gun stats, just before we went on the air, you were telling me what it costs us to have gun injuries in this country.
Sure. So actually, Penelope, do you want to talk about that? I think it was the Mother Jones article about the cost per person per
year.
Oh,
gosh. Yeah, I mean, it's really incredible how much it costs around $700 per person and to pay for all gun-related, firearm-related injuries every year, right?
That aren't covered already by insurance and things like that, right?
Wow.
So yeah. In other words, every year I'm paying out $700 to deal with the damages done by guns in this country.
A $700 tax, basically.
A $700 mm-hmm. tax.
Yeah.
Great. So, interesting.
And by the way, if I can add, the city of Seattle took exception to that and asked and passed a tax actually on the sale of guns and ammunition to help defray the cost that they were having to pay through Harborview Medical Center.
Mm-hmm.
And now that money actually is going into research.
So that actually... That happened there,
yes.
That wasn't rescinded. Great.
Nope, it was challenged by the Second Amendment Association, and the Seattle won the fight.
Great. So that there are things that are possible in terms of dealing with this.
Many things.
Many, many things, which I do want us to get into. One of the things that you just mentioned, well, first I'm just let people know you're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter. This is the Recovery Zone, and I'm speaking with Penelope Spur from Students for Change, high school student here in Portland, and Penny Okamoto, Ceasefire Oregon, and they're both very active in trying to like reduce the number of gun deaths that are happening here in the state of Oregon, and gun injuries and gun expenses, all of that. So one of the things that you mentioned just now was how we can't even know how many guns are owned in this country. What kinds of things is the NRA doing to keep us from knowing what's going on with guns? I know that the CDC can't really do that much research on the whole thing as a health issue.
Do you want to talk about the CDC issue? Penelope, or do you want me to talk about that?
I believe that's been regulated by the Dickey Amendment, right?
Yes.
And that has prohibited the CDC from doing any form of research on gun violence.
Well, so it doesn't actually prohibit them. It effectively
prohibits.
There's
no funding for it? Is that
the
idea?
What will happen is that if anyone does research within the CDC on gun violence, then the money is taken away from something else.
Right.
So do you want money taken away from Zika? Do you want money taken away from the latest measles outbreak to study that? So that's a problem. So Penelope is exactly right. It effectively ends CDC research. But fortunately, there are a lot of great researchers out there, including Dr. Daniel Webster from Johns Hopkins, Dr. Hemingway, just an enormous number of people doing great research. And actually, if you don't mind, I do want to do a plug for another organization I'm involved with called GVpedia. So GVP as in gun violence prevention, EDIA, GVpedia.org. The great thing about GVpedia is that they list all the studies relating to gun violence prevention. Right now, there are over 700 studies in their database. It's free. The public can access it. Right. And they also have white papers on the issue. They started last fall. They've got white papers now on Stand Your Ground, Guns and Women, on the fallacy of guns for self-defense, guns and suicide.
Great. And that's actually one of the things I wanted to talk about. There's two things I actually contacted Penny because earlier in the month there was something going on with what we call 3D printing. And 3D, there's a fellow named Cody Wilson with something called Defense Distributed. He's had a lawsuit where he's saying that it's a First Amendment right to be able to just print anything you want or have any information you want out there on the internet, including the ability to make a plastic gun. So maybe we could go into that just a little bit and what's come of that and where that's going. And can you talk about that, Penny?
Sure. I'm happy to talk about that. I don't want to get too much into the weeds on this because we can get really technical really quickly. So let me give the broad overview first. So Cody Wilson believes that an armed citizenry will keep the government in line. And I would like to remind Mr. Wilson that the United States Constitution not only has a Second Amendment, but the Constitution provides people with the ability to vote. You could actually vote people out of office rather than shoot them. It's just a thought that Mr. Wilson might want to consider. So the founding fathers did not want people threatened with death by people who disagreed with what they said. So that's one thing. Second thing, as far as the First Amendment is concerned, the First Amendment, actually, we've seen this before in things like, knowing how to make heroin, knowing how to make a nuclear bomb. That information definitely can be published, but you can't do it. It's illegal to do it. So there is that aspect of the First Amendment. So this isn't necessarily just a First Amendment or a Second Amendment issue. There's also a common sense issue in this. There's a lot of information that is not allowed to be made public. And I think Scooter Libby would comes to mind on that in outing former CIA agent Valerie Plame. But there's an organization called the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they put out a response to some commentary about this on August 1st on their website. It's SIPRI.org. So, it's the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. And they had, I think I've got their, got it right here, but they have grave concerns, actually, about where this will lead us. Because it's one thing to print out, or it's called additive manufacturing, a firearm that can shoot a couple of bullets. But that will lead soon to the ability to print out other larger weapons. And they are concerned about missiles and other technology. So this isn't something that's just going to happen in 2018 or 2019, but with technology that's going to be available in 2025 and 2030. That combined with the very unwise move that's being considered right now in the Trump administration to change the export of firearms. So no longer... Right now, export of firearms is under the purview, basically, of the State Department. So the State Department can say, you can't export a bunch of arms to Yemen right now. Yemen, there's a lot of problems there right now. But you can export them to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So the Trump administration wants to change that export rule. So instead of being under the purview of the State Department, it's under the purview of the Commerce Department. Commerce Department, of course, wants to sell things. So the Stockholm Institute Peace Research, Stockholm International Peace Research Institute and Ceasefire Oregon is very concerned about both of these things combined together. So the ability for anyone in the world to 3D print a gun, leading to being able to 3D print other objects, combined with a lack of oversight from the United States.
Right. And on top of all that, the guns are plastic, which means that you could carry a gun like that onto an airplane and it wouldn't be seen. There's certain things where it's not okay right now to own a plastic gun. But besides the fact that you could print this gun and it wouldn't be detectable, and also it wouldn't be registered or licensed, obviously.
Right. Well, we don't have licensing or registration, certainly not in the state of Oregon. And it's certainly not a federal requirement. So, but what is a federal requirement since the 1968 Gun Control Act is requiring serial numbers on guns.
Okay.
Now, here's where we're going to get into the weeds. So if gun, it's less than 80%, then it doesn't necessarily require a serial number. You get, I mean, so there are all sorts of ways that, you know, people of nefarious intent can get around these laws.
Which is, again, an argument I hear a lot or read a lot online. Well, a criminal can get a gun anyway. Why do we need any gun laws? They're gonna break the law and get their gun. How do you counter that kind of thing?
So how do they feel about drugs? Should we do the same thing with drugs?
Right.
People are going to get meth. They're going to get heroin anyway, no matter what you do. Why make the law? So laws are there definitely to try to discourage behavior, but also to so society has a way of controlling and punishing bad behavior. So if you've got somebody who is selling meth or heroin, you want to be able to get that person off the street, and you've got to have a legal means to do that. That's why we have laws. Same thing with guns. If you've got someone who is illegally arming people who should not be armed, you've got to find a way to get those people off the street so they cannot continue to arm terrorists or domestic abusers, any list of people who should not be allowed to have guns.
Right. And you were getting that kind of flack. I saw some letter that you had written, Penelope, and people were just saying, oh, she's naive, she's irrational. I mean, how do you respond to that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things to keep in mind is the goal here is just common sense regulation. And in my conversations with law-abiding, responsible gun owners,
right,
they are in complete agreement.
I read somewhere 95% of people who own guns are okay with this stuff, or 95% of Americans.
The goal is not, you know, a form of attack, not looking to take away, like you said before, I'm not looking to take away all the guns from everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just some common sense regulation. And another thing, too, that I wanted to add on before, with Cody Miller and the... Cody Wilson, I don't know why I said that. And the 3D printed guns, mm-hmm, is there are so many questions that arise out of the topic. For example, most people don't have a 3D printer in their home.
Right.
And where you can go is a library, a public library, and there will be 3D printers in some designated room. So is this going to put some responsibility on public libraries and public places that have 3D printers to then monitor their printers to make sure that people aren't creating weapons from them? And another question is, one of Cody Wilson's arguments is that because he's not a seller, he's simply just distributing the information, which,
right,
was his initial goal. He is not required to perform any form of background check or any form of licensing. And that just, I mean, and like Penny said, that's just getting into the weeds. But I mean, there are so many different issues of licensing and permitting and serial numbers. I mean, And what you mentioned before, TSA, I mean, getting through TSA with a plastic gun, it's disturbing, and it seems incredibly unsafe and really just unnerving.
And there's a hold on that right now for maybe a month, a federal judge. But this judge, I think he's in Washington, is going to have to decide on it by August 27th. That's next week, right?
That's correct. So several attorneys general got together, including Oregon Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum, to try to put a stop, basically, to the release of this. Now, this already has been downloaded many thousands of times, unfortunately, but it doesn't mean we can't work to stop future downloads. So there was a hearing yesterday in Seattle regarding this, and that decision has been put off until, August 27th.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll find out next week what's going to happen. And I know that the judge is saying this shouldn't be an issue for him to deal with. It should be an issue for Congress and the president to be dealing with. But apparently that's not happening.
Well, there is actually a bill out there to, to stop 3D printing gun, stop 3D printed guns. I believe it's H.R. 6649. That's off the top of my head. I could be wrong. I believe it's H.R. 6649. If you go to ceasefireoregon.org, you go to our legislative page. So you see ceasefireoregon.org. It says legislation. You click on that tab. And that's probably the top one or two of the bills listed on there.
Yeah.
Right. And so so that will give people an idea of they can read the bill and find out information about that.
And by the way, you have a great website. It's just full of information. ceasefireoregon.org.
Thank you. Yeah. I have to say that, if you'll pardon me for giving a plug here, there's an organization called Cloud4 of Portland that contacted Ceasefire Oregon in response to the Umpqua shooting in October of 2015. And they said, we want to help. And they said, we want to redo your website. And I was like, oh, that's nice. Thanks. and they completely redid our website, our logo, everything. Pro bono.
Wow.
And I tell people I feel like I took my 20-year-old car in to get a free oil change, and I got back a free Maserati. And that's how I feel. And
it's a really organized website. Really recommend people take a look at it.
Jason Grigsby and the wonderful, amazing people at Cloud4 did all that. And they're mobile first. And I just cannot say enough about these people. Thank you would be nice for me to say.
That's good. And so then another issue that's sort of going on here in Oregon is a fellow just got killed, a tattoo parlor guy shot a homeless guy this month in a parking lot here in Portland because, I don't know, I guess he was the tattoo guy was hitting him with a baton, but then unfortunately the homeless guy pulled out a knife, and so the next thing he knew, he was dead. But could you talk about that a little bit, like how that happened and our stand your ground laws in general here in Oregon, Penelope?
Sure. So do you want Penelope?
Penny.
Penny.
Okay. Yeah.
It's
confusing.
It is.
I'm getting mixed up.
It's so unusual to have Penny and Penelope.
Right.
I know we've got a break coming up, and I don't necessarily think I can do stand your ground justice.
Well,
Side.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So Oregon does not have exactly have a stand your ground law. We have more of a castle doctrine law. It's a kind of a little bit complicated there in duty to retreat and things like that. But 35 states actually have some form of stand your ground law or castle doctrine law, which is pretty shocking. And one of the concerns that Ceasefire Oregon has about stand your ground laws, we have many concerns, but one of them is that somebody with a gun automatically becomes the judge, jury, and executioner of someone immediately. And that's certainly violating someone else's rights, isn't it? So we have a lot of there's really horrific stories about people unintentionally shooting. There was a story just a few days ago about a granddaughter who was trying to get into her home. She forgot her key. She knocked on the window at night, and the grandfather shot her to death.
Own granddaughter.
Yes.
Wow.
Right, she did not live. So we can actually I've got more information about that.
Okay. Well, I'll just take a little moment here to say that you're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter. This is the Recovery Zone, and I'm talking with Penny Okamoto of Ceasefire Oregon and Penelope Spurr of Students for Change. And you can also call in if you have a comment or question 503-231-8187. And so anyway, so you're saying that the Stand Your Ground laws in Oregon, I read that they're actually pretty lenient for the Stand Your Ground person.
Yes, right. That's exactly right.
And so how does that go? So anybody, like, compared to other states, for instance?
We're not as, our laws aren't as weak as Florida's.
Uh-huh.
But
Trayvon Martin got shot.
Right. That's exactly right. But they still you don't really have to retreat. In many other states, you have to at least try to retreat. And that hasn't been the case here in Oregon. And again, how much in the weeds do I really want to get here? So, again, if you go to the gvpedia.org website, mm-hmm. They got a great paper actually on Stand Your Ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I had brought it with me. Perhaps I can bring it up on my phone. They've got 10 studies actually that deal with, of all the studies they found, 10 studies deal with Stand Your Ground laws.
Uh-huh.
None of the studies found that Stand Your Ground laws reduce crime. So we've got one study that finds that it might have a beneficial effect on some forms of burglary.
Right.
But that's about it. It doesn't reduce crime, and it does increase homicides. So those are peer-reviewed academic studies. These aren't just what somebody thinks or what somebody feels. These are the actual facts. It doesn't work.
Okay. And so are there any moves afoot to change this?
Not in Oregon at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be good if we were to do that. I would like to see a bill like that put forward in the 2019 session. I have not heard of one that would be, mm-hmm. but Ceasefire Oregon would definitely be interested in a bill like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so and that goes within what kinds of stuff are you guys, like Penelope, what is Students for Change, what are some of the proposals you're actually trying to get out there?
Well, we have a list of about 8.
Okay.
And I don't need to go through all of them, but they range from regulating certain kinds of weapons, like assault weapons, to raising the buying age from 18 to 21 to purchase a long gun, regulating high-capacity magazines and safe storage, licensing and registration, the concept of permit to purchase, and having to re-license every 5 years, regulating ammunition the same way that we regulate weapons, because once you have your hands on a weapon, it's very easy to get a weapon, and if ammunition is easy to acquire as well, then it's
right. This would be like a second check if ammunition
right.
were also
right.
regulated.
Mm-hmm. And it also ranges to instating high school health curriculum that helps raise student awareness of what Penny was talking about before, the Oregon's ERPO, Extreme Risk Protection Order.
Right. You guys, that's another great thing that got passed. We'll have to talk about that. But anyway,
right.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, personally, I find that I'm trying to work with my school administration right now to at least introduce that curriculum to my own school district.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal is to introduce that to all of Oregon. I think it's incredibly important because a lot of students, a lot of my peers have no idea of this option. And Oregon is actually one of just a few states that have actually implemented an ERPO.
Okay, and let's talk about that some more. So this just got enacted like in January or this
right,
year?
Right, 2016, I believe.
Okay, but anyway, what's going on with that? Let's explain that to the listeners.
So an ERPO is an extreme risk protection order,
mm-hmm.
and Penny, correct me if I'm wrong, it's essentially, if a family is concerned about one of their family members harming themselves or harming others, they will be able to petition a judge to take that family member's firearm away.
Okay.
And especially in rural areas where the suicide rate is 14 to 16 per 100,000. And among...
That's the firearm suicide rate. Yeah.
Right.
Firearm suicide rate.
Yeah. And among high schoolers, I think it's incredibly important to raise awareness of this. Not every state has an ERPO, and this has only been fairly recently implemented in Oregon.
Are people getting their guns taken away as we speak from this law?
Sure. So I'm actually going to answer that if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. There have been. Do you want to do it?
No. Sure.
Oh, okay. All right.
Go ahead.
So you're doing such a great job on this. there actually have been instances of the Extreme Risk Protection Order, also called the Red Flag Law, being implemented in the state of Oregon. Right now, about half of them have been enacted or requested, I should say, by law enforcement, because law enforcement does have the ability to petition for an ERPO. So there have been, and we know in states like Connecticut, it actually has been associated with a reduced risk, a reduced incidence of suicide.
Uh-huh.
And so Penelope did a great job of bringing up the suicide rate in rural counties. And especially she was smart to bring up the point that this isn't just an urban situation, because she talked about how it happens all over the state of Oregon, which is why we need this information all over the state of Oregon. The two groups that commit firearm suicide most often, and I really shouldn't use the term commit suicide, the groups that take their lives most often with firearms, younger males, say ages around 17 to 24. I've seen different, sometimes I see 15, sometimes I see 17, up to like the mid-20s, but then also rural white men over the age of 65.
Older men.
Right, older men. Now, one thing that's important to note is that women attempt suicide far more often than men do. But men take their lives far more often by suicide than women, because men usually choose a gun. And people can come back from pills. They can even be rescued from strangulation, which is hanging, basically, and other methods. But
a gun is bang. It's right then, isn't it?
It's pretty lethal. Yes.
Yeah.
And people who do even survive, are often left with traumatic injuries.
And you don't have to think about it that much. Like I read that it's an impulse thing a lot more with a gun. It's just right there. It's right, and it's just one pull of the trigger. It's not too much to contemplate before you're just suddenly impulsively doing this.
Right. I recommend people go to they can check out on information on our website. There are actually some workshops coming up, but there's CALM, Counseling Access to Lethal Means, and there's also QPR, Question, Persuade, and Refer. These are both ways to talk about suicide and suicide prevention to people who you think are suicidal. And again, I kind of urge enough to contact Lines for Life, linesforlife.org. If you've got a friend, you're concerned, a friend, a loved one, and might be thinking about taking their life or his or her life, you can call them up and say, I don't know what to do. What can I do? And they will help you. So this isn't just for people who are saying, I'm thinking about taking my life. This is for people who need help with loved ones who are considering suicide.
Right.
But CALM, Counsel Access to Lethal Means, they're here in Oregon. They have workshops throughout Oregon. And also QPR, Question, Persuade, Refer.
Hmm.
Great information on suicide prevention. This is the kind of thing that, as Penelope had said earlier, really should be in schools. And people should really be talking about it, especially considering the very high rate of suicide, and not just firearm suicide, all forms of suicide within the state of Oregon.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, for example, in my health class, we learn a lot about suicide,
mm-hmm.
And statistics related to suicide, relating to men and women and youth and older folks. But we don't learn too much about prevention.
Wow.
I mean, we are told about hotlines that we can call.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the ERPO is definitely a resource that should be brought up and should at least be brought up to youth who might be aware of a family member or someone that they know
Especially if that family member, if that family member has a gun and they're, you know, showing signs of being suicidal, that this gun, at least this impulsive, quick way to kill himself mm-hmm. or herself, can just be snatched away, basically taken away from them.
I do want to say that under the Extreme Risk Protection Order, the firearms are removed temporarily.
Temporarily.
Mm-hmm. Right. It is it is temporary. The person who has the firearms that to be taken away does have the opportunity to speak to the judge and to be heard and to make a case for himself or herself. Mm-hmm. It is a temporary situation. Another thing that people can do is simply store the firearms elsewhere. Now, under SB 941, which was Oregon's universal background check law that was passed in 2015, it's now called the Oregon Firearm Safety Act. People can actually transfer firearms on a temporary basis. First of all, if there is imminent risk, so if someone has a gun and is saying I'm going to do it, I'm going to kill myself, a person can take that gun away without a background check because it is imminent risk of saving someone's life. So first of all, there is that exemption in the law. Second of all, people can transfer without a background check firearms to immediate family members. And that includes grandparents, parents, brothers, and so siblings, spouses, children, grandchildren.
So it's not
cousins,
taking the
nieces,
gun away.
Nephews.
The government doesn't take your gun away. It's,
no.
Yeah.
No, no, no. Yeah, not at all. That doesn't happen.
Right.
So people do have the process or do have the process of a ERPO, but they also have the opportunity to just do a responsible thing and say, you know what, let me hold on to your gun for a little while.
Yeah.
And they can do it without a background check if it's imminent. But you know what else? You know, if it were my friend and I was that concerned, I would just go get a background check so I could, you know, hold on to the gun for a while till the person got help. I mean, that's what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remember that the background check law was put in place to prevent people who should not have guns from getting guns. It wasn't put in place to harass people who are out hunting or fishing and want to try someone's gun. Okay? That's not the case. It's to stop people from selling guns to people who are felons, domestic abusers, or people who simply should not be, who are prohibited from owning a gun
mm-hmm.
by law.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of the law. And, you know, we hear all this hysterical gun grabbing, you know, it's confiscation time. And that actually is, I've heard that for 20 years now and it's never happened.
They're taking my guns away. Yeah. And that seems to be a big selling point with the NRA, I guess, that this fear that the guns are going to be taken away from us. The NRA is basically probably one of the biggest things that you guys are dealing with in terms of, or I guess, people's, love for their guns too. But the NRA really promotes a lot of that, would you say?
They do. You know, actually, I'm sorry, if you don't mind, I actually want to go back to talking to people about guns and suicide for a moment, if you don't mind. So Dr. Keyes, who is actually with Oregon State University of Cascadia, did a great study on how to talk to gun owners about guns.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they came up with people who love guns, love you, and were worried about you. So a way to talk to people who own guns, who love guns, but are at high risk for committing suicide with their gun for a variety of reasons.
Okay.
There was Marian, and I apologize, I'm going to get his name wrong, Markian Harlick, mm-hmm. actually, just this past week, did an excellent article in the Bend Bulletin about suicide in the state of Oregon, and it does reference that article.
Mm-hmm.
Or does reference that study, excuse me. So I'm sorry about that.
Right. So what you're basically saying is we don't want to get, again, into this whole problem that America has with divisive politics. We want to sort of understand where people are coming from and work on understanding that, but also like trying to talk about values that we might all share, which is like, you know, preserving our lives. Because even like for someone who feels like they have to have guns, it's about protecting themselves and taking care of their families and that kind of thing.
Right.
I mean, that's what you're hearing, right?
So there are a couple of things. One, I always hear this, you know, oh, we just have to have common ground. We have common ground. We have a ton of common ground.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, and Penelope's got some good information on that. But another thing, too, is that people need to realize that there are about, of all gunshots and you know that ring out through the United States throughout the year, about 2,000 times in the United States a gun is used effectively. Well, actually, not even necessarily effectively, but it's used in self-defense. So self-defense gun use is incredibly rare. And part of that is that people simply, they aren't trained. Mm-hmm. You can go and you can buy a gun, but if you're not trained in how to use it, you know, that's a pretty bad thing. It's going to be taken, you know, taken away from you or a variety of very unfortunate incidents. So so it really just doesn't happen. Actually, GVpedia has a great paper on that. But Penelope actually has some really good statistics on the common ground that we have between gun owners and non-gun owners about the laws that they support.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, go for it.
Oh, I mean, especially with background checks and with the topic of assault weapons. I mean, 97% of people want background checks, and 67% want to ban assault weapons. So it's that is, I mean, valid common ground, and I think it's overlooked a lot of the time. But like we were talking about before with GoPro. Gun owners for responsible ownership, mm-hmm. and just law-abiding, responsible gun owners who make up the vast, vast majority of gun owners. We do have common ground, and we do want to achieve the same goals.
It sounds so simple.
Right. And those,
unfortunately.
Yeah. You cited that. So the 97% of the gun owners who want background checks for guns. So that's from the, what poll is that?
Quinnipiac poll.
Yeah. From, mm-hmm. yeah, that was.
From 2018.
Yeah. Yeah. That was right after Parkland shooting. Yes. Thank you.
So I just want to let listeners know, again, you're tuned to the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. I'm here at the station with Penny Okamoto of Ceasefire Oregon and Penelope Spur of Students for Change. And we're talking about the work that both organizations are doing to basically reduce gun deaths. Especially here in Oregon. And that gets us to Penny, your organization. What are some of the things it's promoting? What are you trying to, like, what are some of the main goals of Ceasefire Oregon?
Sure. So our overall goal is to reduce gun violence.
Right.
So Ceasefire Oregon has a 501c4, which means we deal with legislation. We also have a 501c3, which means called the Ceasefire Oregon Education Foundation. And that, as you might think, deals with a lot of education. Primarily, the education aspects of Ceasefire Oregon Education Foundation are suicide prevention and safe storage. That's what we primarily focus on. But we also make sure that people understand the laws that are going on, and we follow the Ceasefire Oregon actually follows many, many federal laws, and we follow all of the state laws that are bills, I should say, that are introduced. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in a federal law that's been introduced, for example, the 3D printing gun, the 6649, Senator Wyden's just co-sponsored a bill, Keep Gun Dealers Honest Act, that's on our website. We follow all of that until they become law or not law. And then mm-hmm. the same thing with the Oregon legislative session. So last year we followed 50 bills, which was the most we've ever followed. And those were all bills that were firearm related.
I know, I kept scrolling on your legislation stuff.
Right. Yeah. And we'll be doing that again. Right now we're taking a look at, we're really excited actually about students and the things that the students are doing. We're also working with Lift Every Voice Oregon. Those are the IP43 folks, we are going to be working with them on a lobby day for September 25th on the Capitol steps, which is going to be pretty exciting, letting legislators know that people, you know, as Penelope said, 67% of Americans want a ban on assault rifles and high-capacity magazines.
And that was IP43?
That was IP43. IP43 has been withdrawn.
Yeah, could
we
you
got
just
so
talk
close.
A little about that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh! So right after Parkland, Pastor Mark Knutson calls me up, and you know I've known him for a long time. We've worked together, and we've been working on assault weapons ban for wanting to do this for years. He calls me up. He's like, Penny, we got to do this. Okay. And I said, we don't have time. Have you looked at the calendar? Do you know how late it is? He's like, I don't care. We got to do this. And I thought, I talked to Ceasefire Oregon board members. And talked to some of our key supporters, and I said, what if Ceasefire Oregon does this, and what if we fail? We're going to put time and effort and money into this, and, it might not happen. And they said, it's a moral imperative. You cannot let something like Parkland happen and not react. So this was our reaction to Parkland. And we knew that we would probably run out of time. Oh, my gosh, though, I seriously, you can see I have goosebumps just thinking about this. It's so exciting. We amassed over 2,000 supporters in a matter of months. In a matter of about 6 weeks, we trained 1,000 people to be signature gatherers because we didn't have the money to go out and pay signature gatherers, but we knew we could get the people to do it. And we needed over 100,000 signatures. Technically, we needed over 88,000. So we were looking for 100,000 signatures. We got 1,000 people to sign up to be trained, who were trained. They weren't just signed up. They were trained. And we knew that they could get 100 signatures each on average. So if we had a week, if we had had a week to gather those, we would have done it.
You didn't even have a week.
Well, we knew that that might not happen. But what we do have now is this incredible base of supporters who are ready to move forward. And we hope that we can move forward in 2019 with a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. And if that's not possible, we're already ready for 2020.
Okay, so real quick, define an assault weapon. I mean, like, because as I was reading online, a lot of the people who objected to IP43 were saying, hey, that's just a normal gun that anybody would have, like an AR-15, I guess.
Well, it's a normal gun now.
Yeah. Okay. Which is also another thing. I think the whole Second Amendment thing didn't take into account the kind of technology that was going to be happening in the 21st century. But so what does IP43 exactly do, and what is an assault rifle or weapon or whatever? How does this? Can you just talk about that a little
bit? Sure, and I'm going to be super quick because we're getting short on time, and you can find that actually on our website. But basically, what we're taking a look at is weapons. These are weapons that are going to be commonly used in mass shootings. And so there are two aspects of it. The high capacity magazine would be anything that holds more than 10 rounds at a time. So in the state of Oregon, when people are hunting large game like an elk, they're limited to 5 rounds at a time. Mm-hmm. So basically, we're showing more humanity to an elk than we are to a classroom of kids when someone comes in there. So Ceasefire Oregon supports a limit of 5 bullets in a magazine. Most of the laws actually push for 10. We think that's something that that Oregonians should discuss, and it should not be a matter of, well, that's, you know, standard. You know, for gun industry, you know what? I don't give a flying fig about gun industry standards. I give a flying fig about the number of kids who are killed in schools and the number of people who are killed in mass shootings. And we know that limiting the number of bullets reduces the amount of people who are killed in mass shootings. And that's actually shown in the YouTube shooting that happened in San Bruno like 4 months ago now. Mm-hmm. She was limited. The shooter was limited in her magazine size because of California law, which greatly limited the number of people who were shot. So magazine size is incredibly important. And now, as far as the firearms are concerned, so this is going to be something that's a semi-automatic. So a fully automatic gun, those are highly regulated. Those are still available, but they're highly regulated by the 1934 National Firearms Act. So I'm looking at Penelope here. You probably don't even remember Al Capone. You ever heard of Al Capone?
Yeah, I have.
I have? Okay, good. All right. So Al Capone, I'm from Chicago, so everybody knows Al Capone. And
right.
See, she's so well educated. She's so smart. Of course she knows that. Of course.
Right.
Way back in 1934, you've got people who are, you know, using Tommy guns and these fully automatic guns and just wreaking havoc. And so those are regulated in 1934. Okay, so a fully automatic gun, basically, the basic difference is that a fully automatic gun, you pull the trigger and the bullets just keep continuing to
fly out of it.
Right, eject until you don't pull the trigger anymore. Excuse me, the semi-automatic, you have to pull the trigger every single time, which to me is not a big difference, but that's the difference legally.
Okay.
And so fully automatic guns and silencers, also called by the industry suppressors, are regulated under that. And to get something like that, you have to go through a process. And it's also $200 stamp tax is what they call it. And by the way, that $200 tax has not been increased since 1934.
Wow.
Right. So those are automatic. So there would be semi-automatic guns. They wouldn't be all semi-automatic guns, but they would be semi-automatic guns that have a series of at least one feature. And those features, they include a barrel shroud or a thumb stock. I'm not going to go into all of it because we're running so short on time.
Yeah.
And again, it's on our website. But those things actually, the reason those are important is because it makes it easier for the shooter to control the gun. And anyone who knows anything about, especially the Dark Knight shooting, that was actually unfortunately very important in that.
So essentially IP43 will curtail a lot of that.
It would have banned the future sale of those particular firearms, right, and high capacity magazines. Right. People who had those guns legally already would register them. Yeah. And be allowed to keep them.
Uh-huh. Okay. And then I don't know how much more time. Is there other things going on with what Ceasefire Oregon is trying to accomplish? And also, really quick, I mean, we're really running out of time. We don't really have that much time. But I was thinking about the whole concealed carry thing and stuff like that. Like, what's going on with that? And are you guys addressing some of that too?
Sure. So concealed carry, so there are two concepts of concealed carry. One is who is allowed to conceal carry, the weak laws that Oregon has on concealed carry, because in the state of Oregon, a person doesn't even need to touch a gun to receive a concealed carry permit. Some counties do require training. Excuse me, but state law does not.
You can conceal carry just by taking a little test online, right?
Basically, yeah. Right, exactly. You have to be 21 years old. You have to pass a background check. But our concealed carry laws are so weak that not even Texas will recognize our concealed handgun licenses.
Wow.
So there's training, and I know there's been talk about increasing training for concealed handgun licenses, and I think right now there are at least 250,000 people and pushing up to 300,000 people in the state of Oregon who have a permit to carry concealed handguns.
And where can they carry them?
One of the frightening things is that people who have a concealed handgun license can carry a loaded hidden gun into any public school in the Oregon K-12.
Okay, now this should upset Penelope.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, I think this was one of the very first subjects that I wanted to get involved in, and that was when our congressional representative, Kurt Schrader, was voted in support of a national concealed carry law. And I was shocked because not only do his constituents not believe in that and strongly oppose it, but
his own constituents.
It's just not common sense. It just doesn't make – I mean, the fact that we're next to Nevada, we're next to Idaho, and those states have particularly weak gun regulations, and just being able to carry a weapon just between state borders is really unsettling.
Yeah, and that's that concealed reciprocity.
Right. Reciprocity. So the best reciprocity most people know is a driver's license. If you have a driver's license in one state, it's recognized in another state.
Right.
And Oregon does not have reciprocity. And again, mostly it's because no one else would recognize us.
Right. So, and then just guns being, you can sneak around, carry them anywhere you want, basically. Except when I went to the federal office building downtown, I got checked my shoes, I got checked.
Right.
Even like a tiny little pair of scissors I had in my purse I had to remove.
And, wow.
Yeah.
You can also, if you have a concealed handgun license, you can openly carry an AR-15 into the state capitol.
Wow.
But you cannot carry a sign.
Wow.
So the other thing Ceasefire Oregon's working on, if I got a quick minute here, is this Second Amendment protection orders. So we're seeing these pop up around Oregon. Second Amendment protection order basically gives the county sheriff the right to interpret the 2nd, 4th, and 10th Amendments of the United States Constitution. Clearly a violation of the Supremacy Act of the United States Constitution and the preemption law, Oregon's preemption law 166.170. So they're clearly unconstitutional on several levels, and they're just silly. Why are people giving the Oregon sheriffs a right to interpret laws? And they also say that the Oregon sheriffs do not have to enforce firearm laws. So the Oregon sheriffs are okay with felons, you know, known convicted felons having guns? I don't know.
Well, I just want to let people know you've been listening to Penelope Spur from Students for Change and Penny Okamoto for Ceasefire Oregon. Go to their websites. Students for Change has a lot of good information. Also, Ceasefire Oregon. This has been the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. It's a show focused on healing our world. I'm Stephanie Potter, and I want to thank Tammy Dean for her fine engineering. I want to thank all of you for listening and supporting your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Thank you, KBOO.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Rick Mitchell, and I would like to invite you to check out my program, Jazz in the New Millennium, at KBOO.FM. Each one-hour program focuses on a living jazz artist, putting their work in historical perspective, from their earliest recordings to their most recent. The current season...